Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And a good Wednesday morning to you. And welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this rainy day. Looks like it's probably going to be like this most of today, if not all of today. Yet again, hurricane effects, Hurricane Zeta, and that's what we're dealing with here in our area. Darren McFarland down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe out on the west side, and Elijah Campbell back at the Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Another loaded show for you today. We're excited about it. We're going to hit on a bunch of things, including Nashville SC in about 15 minutes. We've got Mike Vrabel speaking today as they will get cranked up and start preparing for their next opponent, which will be in Cincinnati against the Bengals. Our weekly chat with Tim Hasselbeck at high noon. And then Rocky Boyman, we go to Cincinnati. We had TJ Houshmandzadeh on to talk about the Bengals. Was that yesterday? I'm losing track of the day. Is that yesterday?
Yeah, that was yesterday.
Jeez, golly, this is all running together. So TJ Houshmandzadeh yesterday, Rocky Boyman today, of course, former Titan, and now he's on WLW 700 there in Cincinnati, the Eddie and Rocky show. Gentlemen, how we doing?
Very good. A little bit sad because now, whereas we were drinking through the fire hose, as we said many times, where you had so many sports, you couldn't maybe keep up with all of them, but you were so excited to always have options. Now that baseball is over, it's football and that's it for a while.
Yep.
For a while.
Which is weird.
It's going to be weird for a while, too. You know, it's going to be a couple months of football only, so let's keep our fingers crossed that they can keep moving along the way they are, so at least we'll have that. But
well, And you have you may have a race today because NASCAR has been trying to get their race in at Texas for the last 3 days, and Mother Nature hasn't cooperated. So they're going to get
like 50 laps in or something.
Yeah, they got 50 laps in, but they're going to try and resume it later on today. So you know, this has been an ongoing saga. Clint Bowyer has led for the longest time in his career. So congratulations to him.
Yeah, that's got to be the longest lead in NASCAR history.
I would think so. Yeah.
I'd love to know somebody buck that and come up with a better answer, somebody that led longer than he has.
Yeah, so we'll see if that happens. But, you know, to answer your question of how I am, I'm fired up, and I've been fired up since last night. So I'm really looking forward to whenever we get into the events of last night's game between Tampa and the Dodgers. I'm pretty fired up about it.
Well, let's get into it. First, let me just tell everybody, there is a big, huge cargo fire that has shut down I-65 South in Brentwood. It's a mess there in Williamson County. So if you're on I-65 South in that area, there is, in fact, it is, like I said, it is completely shut down. So you might want to avoid that area. I don't have any more details of how long this is going to be. My guess is it's going to be a good while. So you might want to avoid I-65 South right now in the Brentwood area. All right, well, Chase, since you're all fired up, it's not even Friday. It's not even noon on Friday. If you're just fired up to talk about it, then lead the way. Let's go.
So I know that we've had the analytics conversation before, and I respect the fact that that analytics are a part of sports, not just baseball. I mean, they are now a much bigger part of sports than they used to be.
Oh, there's a butt coming. I can feel it. I can feel it off in the distance.
You just said the key word there, feel. You still have to have that gut feeling when you're in the midst of a game. And Blake Snell was absolutely dealing last night. He had control. I think he had given up his second hit, and Kevin Cash comes in and takes him out. And I know Snell was upset about it. He said after the game that he was upset about it, that he wanted to stay in. He wanted to empty the tank. It's game six of the freaking World Series, and you're going to trust what the numbers tell you. You're going to trust the computer or however you want to put it, and you go to the pen, and it cost him. Now, am I saying that he was going to be able to keep up that pace the rest of the way and that there wasn't going to be anything else crazy that happens that the Dodgers end up winning? No, I don't know that. We will never know that. But my point is, why would you not keep him in with how he was playing? And the fact that you had the Dodgers in post-game interviews on Fox saying anytime it was brought up, what did you think when Snell got taken out? They all had this look on their face. Mookie didn't want to really talk about it. He didn't want to give his opinion, but Corey Seager
in doing
was like,
so, you could tell.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, they admitted it. I mean, they've
yeah.
They've,
Corey Seager was like,
come out and said, yeah, we were excited.
Well, what was it? Seager said he was gross. He said he was gross. He had gross stuff, and Big Poppy was laughing at that, like he had never heard that. But he did, and they took him out. And so it was just like I was dumbfounded. I was on my way home from Nashville SC, so I was listening to Dan Shulman and company on ESPN Radio, and I could hear it in their voice. They're like, "Wait, what? What's going on here?" So I just don't understand. And I had a my initial thought last night. I go, "All right, if I still feel this way in the morning, I'll actually say it on the air." And I do. If I'm Blake Snell, I say trade me. I want out. I want to go somewhere else. If the team is not going to trust me at this point, if they're going to just go look at a computer and look at numbers, then I need to move on. And I know that he's done some dumb stuff and said some dumb stuff, and I certainly, you know, understand why people might go, I'm not going to really listen to him. But I'd be furious if I was in his position.
Well, I don't think he'll have to worry about it before too long, because the Rays don't pay pitchers like that the second contract. They'll trade him, or I mean they'll likely trade him before he gets close to that.
That's what
yeah, they'll fleece
say.
Somebody
they'll
out.
Fleece somebody.
Mm-hmm. Because that's the irony of this, is they got to this point because of their heavy reliance on analytics, which should not be overlooked in this whole big picture, because their payroll is, I don't know what percentage of the Dodgers, but it's tiny compared to the Dodgers.
You know what'll happen, Willie? I'll tell you what's gonna happen. A little foreshadowing here. The Red Sox, who wouldn't pay Mookie Betts and traded him away to L.A., will trade for Blake Snell and Payne. And everybody will be like, well, why didn't you just give that money to Mookie?
Right. Something like that will happen. Because they're getting
pounded, right? I mean, they're in a weird spot, because right now they're getting drilled, and they've been getting drilled, and it's going to force them to make a stupid move, right? A stupid decision. And that's what they do in Red Sox Nation, because there's a lot of pressure to constantly be good, right? And so now they've been crushed by the Mookie Betts trade. And all they had to do was just, as we've talked about, well-documented on the show, just pay him a long time ago. You could have avoided all this, but they didn't. And now the Dodgers just won it. So you watch. I wouldn't be surprised if the next landing spot is in Boston for Blake Snell.
Right. And so I think this is a great lesson to be learned, and even by the Rays themselves, because I think they got so cocky in their process and said, look at us, we're this amazing outfit. And I'm talking about really beyond the dugout, right? The people way back in the corners in the offices saying, look at what we've done. We are geniuses. We have outfoxed everybody in Major League Baseball. Look at this ragtag group that we pay nothing compared to the rest of the team, and we're two games from winning the World Series. We're one game from getting to a Game 7. And they outthought themselves. They totally forgot the human side, that in the moment, you have to be able to have a feel for what is going on the field. And I don't know if Kevin Cash would be honest about this or not. I would like to know, does he have any authority, really, to decide in the moment that he can stay in?
Mm-hmm. He's not going to.
You know, I mean, did Kevin Cash really think that Blake Snell was done, or was he basically ordered from the get go? Hey, you do not let him face the order for a third time.
Yep.
Because I can show you a lot of numbers. We can define analytics a lot of different ways. I could give you a lot of numbers as to why he should have stayed in. Right. I could say analytics tell me to keep him in. Right.
Well,
but their overriding analytics basically was, our bullpen got us here. We don't let our starters face a great lineup like the Dodgers for a third time. But it is certainly not that simple.
It may have cost him.
Well, it definitely cost him. You could feel it. You could feel it as soon as it happened. My son Mahoney was like, Mookie's going to get a hit here. Why are they doing this? And sure enough, Mookie jumps all over it, and Mookie changes the game on one swing and then one great base running play. And here's the other thing to me about the analytics part of it. The guy they put in, Nick Anderson, right? He was a great reliever And John Smoltz made this point, right? He was tremendous during the regular season, as good as anybody's ever been almost for that period of time. But he had not, it's not like he had been lights out. He had given up a run in six straight games. So they weren't replacing him with a guy that had been lights out. They were replacing him with a guy who, in their mind, was lights out during the season, but had not been lights out during the postseason. That made it even worse to me. Like, if Nick Anderson had like 10 straight scoreless outings, then I would at least say, well, at least they're putting in a guy that has been just as dominant, but he hadn't been. So I just you could feel it right when it happened.
If you don't do that, though, then you're not playing Brandon Lau, because Brandon Lau was playing horrifically, and yet he's a big reason why they got to the spot. They got to the World Series, right? That you could have made a case that he shouldn't even been in the lineup. He was terrible. What was he? Hitless in his last, I don't remember, what was it, 25 or at bats? Or, I mean, I don't remember what it was. It was bad. I mean, I'll just say this. I'm going to take a different side. I hope you guys are sitting down, because you're probably not going to believe it.
I am sitting down, actually.
Darren's going to argue for analytics?
This is what they've done all year. This is the same team that won 40 games and won the American League. This is what they did. Why would you change now, because we've all seen the outcome? Would everybody scream from the mountaintops if it worked and they won Game 6 and pushed it to Game 7? Would the narrative be, they got lucky, they should have never pulled Blake Snell? Would that be the narrative today? No.
I think that's what the Rays have done.
That's what the Rays have done all year. That's what they do. Why would they change now just because we all saw the outcome?
Well, you would
change everything you're saying.
The moment
is true.
It's the feel, the moment. This particular night.
If there's anybody who's argued for the moment and eyeball test over the years, it's me over analytics. You know.
So why are you changing now, then?
Because I think it's highly unfair for a team that is built on scrap heaps and numbers and a computer, which should make people mad. It should. But this stuff has been going on for a good while, and it's not the A's anymore. It's all around the league. That's how they built this, and that's how they got to Game 6 of the World Series. On guys you go, who's that? Who's that guy? Who's that guy? That's what their roster is, and that's how they operate. And I get it. Snell was nasty. He shouldn't have been pulled. But why do you think that they should change now? Just because we've all decided, we've seen the outcome, and it blew up in their face?
We didn't have to see the outcome, though. You knew the moment they made the change and why they were making the change that it was going to blow up in their face.
You did? You knew that right away? You knew? Did you tweet that? Did you say that to people, like, this game is over now?
So I
the Dodgers
there were a lot of tweets. It was interesting to me. There were a lot of tweets immediately going, what are they doing? You know, before they saw what Mookie did.
They do this. So they've done it all year. It's got them to Game 6 of the World Series. So why do you expect a team that has done this? And by the way, I suspect it probably was from up above. I suspect it wasn't from Cash, and so that means we'll never know. But why do you think that they're going to change now? This is what got them to this spot with a tiny payroll in the league. Why do you think they're going to go off of that now? You think that they're going to question what got them to this point now just because Twitter says, what are you doing?
It doesn't have anything to do with Twitter. It has to do with the fact that the manager has to be allowed to trust his gut. Sometimes that means more than a computer. If the guy is dealing and you're clearly seeing that the guy is dealing, why would you take him out?
Because here's the other part of it, Darren. It's the process and the game plan over the big picture does not change. But you're trying to win Game 6 and Game 7. Those same relievers that you're trying to get to the finish line have to come back the next day. And John Smoltz was making this case. You've had a month-long postseason. You're asking the same relievers to come out there and do it every game. Nick Anderson had already shown signs of wear and tear. I don't know where that was in their process, but when you've got a guy pitching as well as he was and you replace him with a guy that hadn't been pitching as well, and also, you're bringing him in to face Mookie Betts, who clearly, they'd been saying that throughout the series, that he had not been hitting lefties as well as he'd been hitting righties. So there was a lot of things to consider there. It made no sense. They outthought themselves. They had it scripted.
That's the key
from
phrase.
The beginning. So they had it almost in their mind before the game started, and they didn't allow anything in the game to factor into that decision. That's where it was wrong.
And that's how they've operated since day one. I mean,
that's where you have to have.
I don't understand why
everybody
wants
a mix.
It's good enough to get them to Game 6 of the World Series. You think they're going to question it now? No, the answer is no.
Oh, I think they're going to question it now.
Well,
because
once again,
if we've
seen the outcome, then yeah, it's real easy to question it. We've seen the outcome. But why do you think in that spot they're going to question what got them to this point? I think it's completely unrealistic to think Tampa's like, this is what got us to this spot. This is how we operate. This is how we go about our business. By the way, we've had games scripted all season long. And this is what we've done, and it's worked for us, and we won 40 games, and we were the top team in the American League. But we're going to switch now because let's just go with our gut in Game 6 in this spot.
It's your eyeballs as well as your gut. I mean, the stuff was the stuff. Nobody was touching Snell. He was overpowering.
You can't.
But that's
tell
not
me
just gut. That's not just, hey, he's tired, he's struggling, but I'm gonna stay with it because I just believe in him. It was what was happening on every pitch. He was throwing dominating pitches. Nobody was hitting the ball hard.
I understand. I watched it just like you guys did. I know.
And what had been happening, use your eyeballs with Nick Anderson. He'd given up a run in six straight outings in the postseason. Six straight.
That's how they operate, though.
You bring in a guy that keeps giving up runs? That's not analytics.
Well, that operation needs to change now. I think the manager should have the right. If he feels like he needs to change, he can change. Because if he doesn't, that's wrong.
Send that memo to Tampa.
I will. I'll type it out during the break.
All right, we'll come back. We'll talk a little Nashville SC. I want to hear the typewriter in the background. We'll talk a little Nashville SC.
Dear Tampa Bay Rays.
On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back here on 102.5 The Game. Darren Donick and Chase, as we mentioned at the top, a big, big win last night on the road for Nashville SC in Montreal, and they continue to move towards the postseason in their very, very first year. And all that they've been through, it is a great, great story. So
awesome.
In the coming weeks, not only do we have what we all call football, but what our next guest has referred to as football many times in his life, but soccer. Tony Husband is the voice of Nashville SC on the television side. We have enjoyed his coverage. And, Tony, thank you so much for joining us here today. Another big win for the guys at 4-1-4 in the last nine. They are on the verge of clinching a postseason berth. That is a real big check mark for them.
Good morning. Great to be with you. And absolutely fantastic. Yeah, coming back off another great result. Talk about the recent run. You know, this is a team that the story has always been a pretty special one this year, and the story is just getting better. And the ceiling for the team, you just kind of feel, is getting higher. Excellent result last night. Again, we saw what Nashville are kind of best at in grinding out, in digging out results, getting results when they need to. A team that really, each individual in it, you know, they know their job. And they do their job well. Three big points, effectively in the playoffs now. Mathematically, that's got to be, you know, confirmed over the next few days. Could happen as soon as tonight. But this is just good times. It's great for a first-year team like Nashville, and in the year that we're all having, let's face it, you know, to be in this position is a tremendous feel-good for everybody in this, you know, this new emerging market of soccer in Nashville.
And Tony, I think you just put it into perspective. Everything, as we crowned a baseball champion last night, we crowned NBA, NHL. Part of the story is being able to navigate through all of the circumstances. And no greater example than Nashville SC, the way it started off, the return to play, where they weren't able to participate in the tournament down in Orlando. At that point, if I'd have told you that they could get to this position, where they're on the verge of clinching a postseason berth, and it could happen today, What would you thought the chances would have been at that time?
Well, I'll be honest. I think I would have said, well, that might be a stretch at this point. You know, you just don't know how people can react with the months of inactivity. You know, when you blend any team together in any sport, you know, if you don't get a lot of time on the training ground to learn, you know, both about your teammates and also about the job that your coaches want you to do, it's going to be very difficult to go out there on the field and follow those instructions. And yet, actually, Nashville have been able to build very, very quickly. I think it's a great testament to the coaching ability of Gary Smith. You know, again, proving why, you know, here's a guy who 10 years ago won MLS over in Colorado, and has had to be quite patient to wait for his opportunity to kind of really get back into the league and maybe prove a few people wrong. And boy, is he doing that at the moment. So, yeah, if you take us back to that place, the pretty dark days of June and July, to be where Nashville are right now, really is a good moment. And, you know, we could be talking about any sport, momentum so much. And when you hit that momentum in a season, it is a big thing. And Nashville are just, you know, riding that momentous wave in towards postseason.
Tony, as you look at the overall talent, I know they have brought some players in over the course of the season. How much has that upgraded the talent? You mentioned the job that Gary Smith has done, taking this new group of people who they've added to since the start of the season and having them mesh. But what about just the people who recognize and make the player moves to give them as much firepower as they had for a first-year team? How well have they done in that area?
They've done really well because this is a team that ultimately was, you know, when you look at the two new teams that came into MLS this year and the kind of budgets and roster values of them. You got Inter Miami down there in Florida who got a lot of kind of headlines around the world, the association with David Beckham. But, you know, a seriously high budget in MLS terms and roster value and the kind of players they've brought in. Nashville were not going to go down that route. They were going to go down the route of building the foundations, building something that hopefully will be long-lasting. And this year is about, you know, just getting those building blocks in place. And Mike Jacobs and his staff, the general manager, Ian Eyre, the CEO, vastly experienced in building teams, been at, you know, the likes of Liverpool over the years, over in the English Premier League. You know, they took the long ball approach. But, you know, we also have to be realistic. People are short-sighted in sports. So, you know, you can take a long ball approach, but you need to get results as well. Big moves just before the season began, bringing Walker Zimmerman into the defense. That really helped lay that foundation. The partnership he has formed with Dave Romney has been awesome. And then if you can build from something at the back where you don't give too much away, then it's what can you put on top? Now, a criticism perhaps in the first early weeks of the season would be, well, not scoring enough goals. There's not enough on offense. And Gary Smith's been quite open about that. And now you're starting to see those bits fall into place as well. They've boosted the roster. You've seen some of the players who've arrived, like Hany Mukhtar, taking some time to find his feet, but started to hit top form. Randall Leal now is starting to be a real threat. And John Ducadiz, the Venezuelan who's just arrived, you know, adds more firepower up front. So you put that package together and, yeah, from foundations, this is now, you know, proven to be fruitful as well at both ends of the field.
Tony Husband is with us, the television voice of Nashville Soccer Club. And, Tony, you bring up Randall Leal. He scores again last night. And it feels like the combination of Leal and Alex Mwiel seems to really be starting something for this team as they're piling up the goals.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want the kind of the epitome of a heads-up play, I mean, the goal last night just sums it up. And, you know, for a lot of new viewers to soccer, you know, often a match can be decided in one instant. And last night's match, effectively, you know, there are fine margins in this sport sometimes. Last night's match comes down to absolute heads-up moment from Alex Mwiel. He goes down, he takes the foul, referee blows the whistle. Alex Mwiel, if you look back on the pitches, he's already got his head up. He is seeing what's ahead, and he sees that Randall Leal is in an opportunity. If he takes the free kick, catch that Montreal back line out. And so Alex Mwiel, before he's almost hit the deck, he's back on his feet, quick free kick. That is the winning goal, and that's the key moment. And, you know, it's that kind of heads-up play in every sense that is the difference between 3 points and 1 point on the night, and that is what gets you up the standings.
How impressed have you been with a player like Daniel Rios? You know, he did spend some time here last year with the USL team, but now really making his impact on the MLS squad.
Well, that's right. I mean, this is a player in Daniel Rios who opportunity beckons, doesn't it? He's a great finisher. He's an intelligent player as well. He thinks about his game. He's always thinking out on the field. Gary Smith talked to me a little bit about that earlier this week, about the intelligence, game intelligence that Daniel Rios has. Really important for a striker in often contained areas. Now, he's having to play quite often up front on his own. There's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. But we've started to see again with him, you know, it's a tough year to adapt. These guys come into the, onto the field in February. For some of them, it's a step up in quality going into Major League Soccer. Then they have kind of 5 months where it's training at home and a little bit of start to get back as a group. Then they don't play in Florida like we talked about. And then it's all systems go and you're playing two times a week. So Rios is another who is adapting and having to learn and use that game intelligence and learn fast. And we're seeing it come through, you know, with some excellent goals in recent weeks, you know, thinking back to the home game against Dallas last week, you know, some real quality there. And that little bit of quality, that's what pushes you from being a kind of middling side who's doing okay to being a side who actually, you know, can scare a few people.
You brought up Jhonder Cadiz earlier, and as I'm learning this game and being there with all of you during the broadcast, you know, whenever he comes on the pitch, I feel like the energy changes, that whether it's with the team or, you know, when the crowd has been there, it just, there's something different when he comes on, and he is one of those, as we say, a game disruptor. And I feel like as his conditioning goes up, he's going to be able to make even more of an impact.
Yeah, and I mean, let's just use the analogy maybe of, say, Derrick Henry with the Titans. You know, when Derrick Henry's passed off the ball and he runs up the gut, you know, you often feel something's going to happen because here's a moment in a game. This is a big, physical, powerful presence on the field who can make things happen. Now, Jhonder Cadiz comes into the game as a kind of impact substitute at the moment for Nashville, and he's immediately a big, strong figure, standing over at 6'3". He's a powerful figure on the field. The other thing to watch for, if you're learning this game of soccer, is when the ball goes forward to the strikers. Now, if they're playing up front on their own, which they often can be in the system Gary Smith employs, is that you need the ball to stick to them. You need them to take that ball and allow those midfield players to catch up with them and then create opportunities and openings around the field. Now, the thing that I like about Cadiz that we're seeing is when that ball goes up to that big, strong character, well, if it hits his chest, if it hits his feet, the ball is sticking to him, and that will then allow some of the other players to come into play. It will allow the likes of Randall Leal, Alex Will, a fit Hani Mukhtar, to start to come into that play and push towards that all-important final third of the field where you're going to do the scoring damage. So impressed by Cadiz. He's still, you know, some way short of 90-minute match fitness, and he's going to be an impact substitute, I think, for the time being. But, boy, is that a good thing to have coming onto the field, somebody who can have that impact on a game.
Tony, we talked a little bit off the air last game I worked with you about, you know, what it was like in the UK with when the NFL would come over there, and now that you're here and you're seeing how our city is, you know, learning soccer and appreciating soccer. So what has that experience been like for you to see this fan base in a very weird year grow for this young team?
Oh, it's been superb, Chase. I mean, the welcome, first of all, you know, they told me about the Southern welcome, and, you know, it has not let me down at all. You know, my wife and I came over. You know, it's a tough year to, you know, to move across the pond in a pandemic with all the challenges we've had. But folks have been fantastic. And what is great is that, you know, the research I did about Nashville before arriving was kind of, you know, this sports mad city. You look at, you know, it wasn't particularly a hotbed of hockey until the Preds really got up and running, and the success and the fan base that they've been able to build. I'm a huge NFL fan, as you know. So, you know, I knew all about the Titans, and it was exciting to me to, you know, to live in a city with an NFL franchise. So really, really positive. But the thing I like is I go around Nashville, meet more and more people, is, yeah, you know, whether they know their soccer or whether they really are at the, you know, it's baby steps and they're learning about the game. You know, people want to know and they want to support a team in Nashville that represents the city. And, you know, I know that's very much the mantra of John Ingram, the, you know, the principal owner, is about this is something for Nashville. You know, it's about Nashville and it's about, you know, the future. And it's been really exciting and really good to, you know, to help educate some people on soccer if they're just getting new into it. And then to just talking soccer with those who, you know, for the last few years, it's been about maybe getting up early on a Saturday morning and heading into Printer's Alley and watching their fix of, you know, Premier League or something like that.
Tony Husband with us. Tony, before we let you go, Give people sort of an outlook here. I know the next game is Halloween night. Right now, Nashville SC is 7th, and I was watching your post-game coverage last night. So 7 versus 7, 8, 9, and 10 will be in the postseason in the Eastern Conference, but they've got to play in the play-in. Is there a chance that Nashville SC could move into the top 6 and not and avoid that if they have a strong finish here?
Yeah, they could. I mean, and the momentum with them at the moment is that, you know, they're starting to now just little push up there. They're only a point behind New England. You know, they went above the New York Red Bulls last night. You know, any kind of playoff for a first-year team would be deemed a success. But actually now, you know, play-in round was definitely the target. I think even only a couple of weeks ago we'd be saying, you know, this could go down to being tight around that kind of 9th, 10th, 11th. Who's going to be in those places? Well, Nashville have got a reason this morning to be looking up, you know, looking up at the Eastern Conference standings, not down. You know, and don't forget, we're talking about the scenarios about, you know, what would happen to get them in the playoffs, confirm them in the playoffs tonight, you know, Miami defeat and Atlanta not winning. But, you know, Nashville's still got 3 games to go in the regular season, including Chicago. Big boost has been getting fans back inside Nissan Stadium. And, you know, fans can get on the website and you know, get tickets for these games. Limited attendances. But even with a limited attendance inside Nissan Stadium, you know, those fans, those voices are making a difference. So we look forward to seeing people on Halloween night. And, you know, let's make sure it's scary for Chicago.
Yes, that's well put. Tony, you've done an outstanding job. I know so many of the fans just can't wait. If there's any group of fans that deserves to go watch their team play, it's those fans because they've had to be very, very patient here. But in the meantime, they've enjoyed watching you on the telecast. Thanks for joining us today, and we will talk to you very soon.
Looking forward to talking to you again. It's so great to be part of this national sporting community. Loving it. And everybody out there, just, you know, let's keep cheering on all our teams.
All right. That's Tony Husband, voice on the television side of Nashville SC. Their game next is at Nissan Stadium, Halloween against Chicago in a big one. 3 games left in the regular season. Hopefully by then, Chase, they'll have it all sewn up, at least to be in the postseason. Yeah. But how high could they be seated? It's a great story. Jump on the bandwagon. Hey, this is the time to do it. Like
there's
we said,
room. Come on.
It's you know, we have the football going on, but other than that, now that you know hockey won't be starting for a while, basketball not for a while, you can really focus in as they go down the stretch run. It'll be fun. So Chase, get it started, and I know you got a word about MGM.
Yes, I do. So BetMGM Sports, it's coming soon. It's almost here. Sports betting in our state. You know that I am very excited about that. So the same people that light up the Las Vegas Strip with the world's greatest sports books and casinos will be offering real money wagering on a state-of-the-art app that's easy to use, and it has all of your favorite features that you look for in a betting app. You can get parlays, boosted odds specials, in-game wagering. I have been known to do that at times. Daily promotions and much more. Every time you make a wager, you'll earn credits in M Life Rewards. That's the exclusive loyalty program of MGM Resorts. So it helps you in more ways than one. Every big game and every big play will mean more than ever. So get ready to experience sports like never before. Be among the first fans in the state to download the BetMGM Sports app coming soon to Tennessee. Just go to BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 years of age or older. You must be present in the state of Tennessee. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line, 800-889-9789.
1-1 in a swing and a liner to center field, and that's a base hit. Got a slider up in the zone, the second hit of the night for the Dodgers. Off of Snell, and all eyes are on Kevin Cash right now. And he is on his way to the mound. That is it. And he has made the signal. Blake Snell will not face top of the order third time around. They saw what happened in the fifth inning. Snell is not saying anything, showing his displeasure. But he is showing his displeasure with a little shake of the head. He is not happy that he is out. He was fantastic tonight. But the Rays are sticking to their analytical guns, if you will, and that is bringing in a new arm third time through the order.
Since you heard on our airwaves last night, Dodgers get it done. They win the World Series. Take game 6, 3-1, and Mookie Betts is now a 2-time World Series champion. Wanted to update everybody on I-65 southbound past Old Hickory Boulevard. They're in Williamson County.
I told you things were completely shut down, and they're not expected to open again until at least 1:30. And it looks like it was 84,000 pounds of steel and in the form of steel coils wow. that have spilled onto I-65. It was a huge fire. Like I said, everything has been shut down. And so if you are I-65 southbound past the Old Hickory Boulevard exit, you're going anywhere near that way, you need to make sure you get off and go somewhere else, because that is not going to be open. It is going to be a mess for miles and miles and miles until, like I said, at least 1:30. One other thing to pass along, I hope you're sitting down. If you're not, if you can't, I understand. But no one could have seen this coming, but Wisconsin and Nebraska have postponed their game this weekend. A
what?
Big Ten game has been postponed. Like I said, I warned you.
You're kidding me.
If you're sitting down, if you're not sitting down, please do. I didn't want any accidents because I know the shock value is extremely high.
I just dropped coffee on the cat.
I know. Who could have seen this coming, you know? And
I didn't really. People,
gosh, imagine that in week two. There's already been a postponement. And by the way,
and
there'll be more.
They can't make this one up. That's the problem with the starting so late is there's no cushion on the schedule. So that's just one less game they can play.
I said postpone, and you're right. You're right. They have come out and said canceled. I'm not willing to say that, Willie, because I've got to believe at some point they're going to have to rethink this. Because what if they get four? What if they're the OVC and they get four games in? You know, I mean, so are they going to say, "Hey, you got to put Ohio State in"? Everybody knows they're good, and the SEC is like, "Yeah," and the ACC and the Big 12, they're like, "Yeah, but we played 10 games, and you played four." Don't you think that there's going to have to be a, if this continues, which, like I said, it's not going to be the last one. We knew this was coming. Don't they have to say, hey, we're going to have to push this back some. We're going to have to allow them to play some more games.
Push what back some?
The playoffs.
The playoffs?
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't know.
I mean, number one, when has the Big Ten ever rethought anything? Oh yeah.
Too soon?
Maybe not. Yeah. No, it's not too soon. Listen, the playoff, I don't see them moving anything around for the Big Ten, and they shouldn't. The Big Ten did this to themselves. They drug their feet.
I'm with you.
I think they knew that.
I think they knew that when they decided to do it. They knew I don't think they can ask to move the playoff back. I think they're just going to have to get what they can get.
I don't
in.
Think they should, but I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, if they're like, hey, since we're here now, I know we're a little late. Sorry about that. Got caught in traffic. But could we maybe push this back?
I haven't heard that push. I wonder if that will happen at some point.
Well, you haven't heard it because it just happened just now. So, I mean, what if half their games get canceled? You know what I mean?
Because that's the scary part is I don't know when Wisconsin can play again. Their head coach has tested positive. Their
quarterback's out for at least 3 weeks because
right.
of it.
And Trevor Maddox was explaining that. They have some very strict, maybe stricter than some leagues, protocols in terms of close contacts and tracing where you have to quarantine even longer. That's where the 3 weeks comes in. So it's going to make it harder for rosters to stay at the level that you have to have them at. So these next few weeks are going to be really interesting, especially with the caseloads going up the way they are all around the country.
Yep. So I just wonder. I wonder if this is – we can get back into this in a little bit, because I do wonder if this is going to become a story of, yeah, I know it sounded good, but I mean, realistically, if you've got a Big Ten schools playing six and seven games, I mean, honestly, how do you get in a room and compare them to a two-loss, you know, SEC team that played 10 games?
That's what you have to do.
But still.
If Ohio State's 6-0, I think Ohio State will be in there.
I don't disagree with you, but is that right? I mean, well, you know there won't – everybody won't agree with that.
No, everybody won't, and that's where I think sometimes we get into this mindset. There's sort of a preset thing in everybody's mind that Ohio State's that good.
Yes.
It's just the eyeball test.
They're right now. Yes, it's paper. Yep.
But,
right, but they get the benefit of the doubt because they're Ohio State. If it was Illinois that was 6-0, then I think there'd be a lot of questions.
But what?
Is Illinois really that good? Is Northwestern really that good? If they were to go 6-0, but it's the reputation of the program that will carry them in.
So what teams would they beat though? If you play their first six games and they go 6-0, so that would include wins over Nebraska and Penn State, Rutgers, Maryland, Indiana, Illinois. That's it. So you wouldn't play Michigan State or Michigan.
Most people say Ohio State is number two or number three. Everybody who does rankings have them in there.
Right.
They even played a game.
No, most people believe they're the best team in the country.
Yeah. And
that's what I'm saying.
Okay. But you still got to play the games. And how can you justify saying, well, they only got to play six games, but we all thought they were the best team in the country, so we're going to put them in anyway. Georgia, I mean, they had a tough SEC schedule and lost two games, but sorry, snooze, you lose. You're out.
Yeah, what if Georgia loses to Alabama and Florida? That's their two losses.
I think it'd be a great debate. I don't envy that. I don't envy that, but that's what we root for sometimes, the chaos.
Yeah, we knew this was coming, too. We knew.
Sure.
And you're right. Chase, yeah. I'm with you. I don't have any sympathy whatsoever. This is their doing. This is all of because of them. And, you know, them making a decision way too early. And so this is what happens. I'm just saying, how bad does it have to get before they eventually get in a room and say, okay, do we need – and by the way, the Pac-12 is supposed to start, what, next week? I don't think it's not this weekend, it's the following weekend. And so when that starts with them too, it's like, okay, are we really going to be – on schedule to do this whenever teams are playing four and five
start,
and six games?
Week, the 7th.
Yeah, that's what I thought. First weekend in November. I mean, it's going to happen to them too, just like we knew it was going to happen to the Big Ten, and Wisconsin and Nebraska won't be the last game. It's the beginning of games that will get canceled or postponed, however they want to word it. And then how many does it take before they get in a room and say, okay, we got to talk about this? Or maybe, I don't know, Willie, maybe you're hinting that you don't believe that'll happen, that they're just like, yep, that's what it is, and we just keep rolling. I don't know. I think that'll be hard to do.
Are we going to end up having a Big Ten versus Pac-12 championship game or something like that at the Rose Bowl?
At the Rose Bowl?
You have not only the playoff, but you have all of the other bowl games that are going to have to – like, did you see that Army is already – accepted a bowl bid?
Yes.
So it's just interesting. They're going to have to get very creative because there's going to be a lot of teams with very different records, and so who knows what some of the bowl matchups are going to be very interesting to see what the records are.
I think we're all going to just look at this and go, okay, well,
yeah, this is what we have to do. This is different for this year. It's going to be different.
When the Pac-12 goes, hey, what about us getting in? The committee can go, well, you weren't going to make it in a normal year.
But for the bowl games to fill out the actual schedule, they need the Pac-12 teams in there, even if their record's 2-2.
I know.
They're like, fine, you played four games, please come to our bowl game, the Emerald Bowl or whatever, you know, whatever it is.
The only thing I truly care about is just get the four teams into the playoffs and be as fair as you possibly can in this year of making it the right four teams. And I know people are going to argue that, because whether you end up with two SEC teams and the Big Ten gets left out because they didn't play as many games or what have you, you're going to have people that are up in arms about it. But you just do the best you can. I don't care about the other bowl games. I mean, do the best you can.
Along the COVID lines, let's talk about Justin Turner last night. Something that kind of gets a little bit lost in the shuffle over the Blake Snell and him being removed from the game. But not really. It's still a topic on hand. Is he had a player in the World Series last night get pulled in the middle of the game or past the middle of the game. And then the look coming back was not very good. And a lot of people are upset about it, including the team pictures, the interviews on the field, and even apparently out celebrating afterwards. Well, what do you guys make of all the Justin Turner angle and the Dodgers as we sit here on this Wednesday morning?
It was incredible to see that unfold. I almost flipped the TV off and was, you know, ready to move on with the rest of my night after the game was over. But I said, you know, what the heck? I'll watch the trophy presentation, which was bizarre in many ways, right? Rob Manfred, I don't know what was going on.
Yeah, what was up with him?
I don't know what was going on in his, you know, he had earphones in, right? So something tells me he was hearing an echo or something. I don't know what, he sounded completely rattled or something.
Funny. The booze threw him off.
And something had to be affecting him. I don't know what it is. Hopefully he'll come out and say. He also got booed. Yeah, so that was
going on.
And then the Dodger owner who gave a great heartfelt speech, but it just kept going. It was like one of those acceptance speeches. He had a big piece of paper.
Where was the music?
Well, somebody, play the music. Yeah, get the orchestra going. Let's move on.
You know, play the music.
Can you imagine? Tom Verducci must have been like giving him the, speed it up, dude. Come on. We don't have all night here. But in the meantime, you're hearing this story for the first time about Justin Turner. And, you know, let's be honest. It's not a good look for him to come back out there. Now, I saw he had the mask on.
He doesn't in the picture I'm looking at
barely,
right now.
Barely.
Well, he had it on, and then he took it off for the pictures. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he put it back on, but I don't know.
He's in the dugout hugging everybody.
I know.
He does not have a mask on.
I know, and he kissed his wife.
He was doing interviews on the field. I could see him in the background, no mask on.
That's not a good look, but I do want to say this. In baseball's defense and in Justin Turner's defense and the Dodgers, I think there were some points in the season I wasn't sure that they could get to this point. They crowned a champion. They're really fortunate the Dodgers won the game, or else they'd have a total mess about what to do about Game 7.
Yep.
But they got through the entire postseason without a single positive test until last night. That is a victory, because at the beginning of the season, we were all thinking, are they even going to be able to keep going? Like, there were some calls that they might have to pause the season, right?
Right.
In the first month, I didn't know if we would get to the second month. Yeah, so in perspective, to have only one test is a huge feather in their cap. But I just the optics of it were awful doing that. Like, I understand you want to be part of the celebration. You waited so long to win, but that's just part of it, right? When you're positive, you can't do that, right? You get come out, and if he was spaced and he had a mask on the whole time, that'd be one thing, but that's just not good to be walking around. And I just hope they don't have a series of other positives as a result, but we know that that can happen, right? We've seen it happen.
I just got, you know, when Kevin Burkhardt broke the news and then the pictures come out and you see that he's out celebrating, like I'm looking at one right now, it's the team photos, he's right next to Dave Roberts. It just now.
Who had cancer. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the sense is out, or the sense that I got was, meh, okay, like whatever. We won now, so I mean, if we all get it, we all get it.
And they had been such a stickler. They had not had any problems throughout the entire season with positive tests. That's the irony of it, right? They did an amazing job. They got to the last game without ever having an issue with their team, which was, we knew, part of the formula for winning a championship.
Didn't Kenley Jansen had it before the season, right?
Right, he did. And he said he never really felt right the entire year in recovering from it.
I would say that too if I were him.
But, I mean, that is, in all seriousness, that is a concern of people that get it. Even if, you know, you do, quote, recover, are you quite the same? Or how long does it take you to get through the fatigue and the after effects?
To be honest, I haven't really heard that a lot. So
it's out there. It's out there.
Been a lot of people test positive that are famous and get interviewed, and I haven't heard a lot of people talking about lingering effects for months. I just haven't. So I'm a little surprised by that.
But you need to read a little closer. It's out there. I'm just being honest. I've read a lot about it.
Rudy Gobert was one as well. I think he said he didn't feel right for a couple of weeks. It wasn't like it was months, but for a couple of weeks he was.
Well,
still...
I mean, you're talking about before the season and through the entire season. I mean, we're talking months. This is what he said. More than a couple of weeks.
Just, I'm reading what his quote was.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, he feels how he feels. I was trying to make a joke about his pitching, which wasn't.
Yeah,
great.
I got it.
Well, he lost his job.
Well, they got all sensitive.
Well, I mean, it's a pretty serious thing. I mean, that is the unknown, right? We're still, years from now, I'm hoping we don't have a lot of people walking around going, boy, this never got back to quite the same. I hope that's not the case.
Either way, it wasn't a good look for Justin Turner.
No, it was terrible.
That's for sure.
It was terrible. And the Dodgers, you know, they got caught up in the moment. We know that that happened. If you put yourself, if you were in Justin Turner's shoes, and as he said, he felt asymptomatic. He had no idea, right? He was playing in the game, but they just should have isolated him. They shouldn't have let him back out there. Or if they did, he should have been in one area, spaced out with the mask on, taking huge precautions. You know, if you were going to try to meet him halfway, but walking around without a mask, that's
right.
A terrible
being
look.
Being out there was already a victory for him.
Yes.
But to be out there and be, you know, what some of you is reckless, it was just disappointing.
Very disappointing. Very disappointing.
All right, we'll come back. We should be able to hear what head coach Mike Vrabel has to say as they start getting prepared today in the bubble because of the weather for their next opponent, the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll do that to start hour number two of Darren, Donnick, and Chase. That is next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.